We're on Daf Nun Beis Amud Beis. We're just go quickly go over the Mishnah and start in the Gemara. I mentioned at the end of the last year that this is one of two places in Shas where we have a Mishnah that in the Bavli and Yerushalmi are printed differently. I mean, there are many examples where the difference is, but this is not a difference that's a scribal error or some other kind of error, but it actually reflects two different stages historically of the Mishnah. Rebbe when he was younger, Rebbe Yehuda Nasi when he taught the Mishnah, and Rebbe when he was older and he changed his mind about something. And in both cases, what we have printed in the text of the Yerushalmi reflects the earlier stage of Rebbe's Mishnah, and what is found in the Bavli reflects the later stage. Unless the cynic, you know, suggest, but that's only the Bavli's account of what's earlier and later. If you look in the Yerushalmi here as well, in Avodah Zarah, even though you have what is called the younger version, the older version of the, historically, further back in time, version of the Mishnah, and printed in the Yerushalmi, the discussion in the Yerushalmi makes clear that that, in fact, was the earlier opinion, and that is not the opinion that ultimately stood. In the earlier opinion, it was conceivable that the Avodah Zarah of a Jew had bittul, which is a concept the Gemara here will struggle with a little bit. We've established, we've been working with the assumption for a while now, that a non-Jew's Avodah Zarah has bittul. He can nullify it. Maybe any non-Jew can nullify it, or any idol worshiper can nullify it. But a Jewish Avodah Zarah that a Jew worshipped has no bittul. Or Avodah Zarah that belongs to a Jew and he worshipped has no bittul. And yet the earlier, that really reflects what seems to be the later version. So the Mishnah, as we have it, says as follows. Oved kochavim, mevatel avodas kochavim shalov shel chavero. He can be mevatel his avodah zarah and the avodah zarah of a non-Jew, of another non-Jew. Now the interesting question here, which is discussed, and I don't think it's mentioned in the Gemara, but it is discussed in the Rishonim. Is it possible any non-Jew can be mevatel another non-Jew's avodah zarah? So the Gemara later says that if one non-Jew worships Pa'or and another one worships Mercury, so you can be Mevatel the Avodah Zarah of a different Oved Avodah Zarah. But let's say you have a non-Jew who is Mekabal of Sheva Mitzvahs, he accepts the seven Noahide laws, and he doesn't worship Avodah Zarah. Is he able to be Mevatel the Avodah Zarah of another non-Jew? And the conclusion seems to be that no, he can't. In order to be Mevatel Avodah Zarah, you have to be one, right? You can be a non-Jew, but not an Oved Avodah Zarah. Marshall?
Is there a poster of the text? Is there an argument that Chavero specifically means someone who is within an ideological sort of place on the spectrum, and that's why? Because that would be a textual support for that.
It's hard to know because they have an explicit brisa later. And therefore, I don't know if it's necessary. If you were going to argue the Chavera reading, one could have just as well argued that it has to be really, you know, how much on the ideological spectrum. You could have said, if you want to be a Mato Pa'or, you have to recognize Pa'or, because that's called Chavera. So you're right, on the one hand, Chavera could imply Oved Avodah Zarah, but you could have also argued for a narrower reading, but the Braisa makes it explicit. So, Oved Kochavim Vata Avodah Kochavim Shalom B'Shal Chavera, but for Yisrael, Ein Bevata Avodah Kochavim Shal Oved Kochavim. He cannot be Mevatel the Avodah Zarah of a non-Jew, and it's not stated, but it's assumed he can't be Mevatel Avodah Zarah of a Jew, his own Avodah Zarah, because nobody can be Mevatel the Avodah Zarah of a Jew. Then, HaMevatel Avodah Kochavim, Mevatel Misham Sheha, but Bitel Misham Sheha, Misham Shem Mutarim Vehi Asura. If you have an Avodah Zarah, and then you have something that is a Mishamish Avodah Zarah, supposing a person, you know, had a base Avodah Zarah, he had an idol set up in there, and he decided to do away with the idol. He did tshuva, he recognized it's nonsense, he, in the spirit of Avram Avinu, picked up an axe and he hacked the idol to pieces. So what about the status of the house around it, the base Avodah Zarah, the church, if you want to call for that Avodah Zarah? So the Mishnah says, if the Ikar is batel, then certainly the tafel is batel. If the primary thing is no longer valid, is null and void, certainly the accessories to that. However, bitel misham sheha, misham shemutar v'asura. The fact that you're mevatel the things that are used to minister, to serve, to assist in the worship of Avodah Zarah, if you nullify those, the nullification works, but it doesn't work, but the Avodah Zarah is still assumed to remain intact. Okay.
Could a Jew mevatel be misham sheha?
Can a Jew be mevatel misham sheha? I presume not. It's not discussed. Misham Sheha of which? Of a Goy's Avodah Zarah? I assume the answer is no. The more interesting question, we mentioned a couple of shiurim ago, the Ramban had a discussion based upon a Gemara on the previous Amud, where the Gemara wanted to know whether, according to Shitas, I think Rabbi Yishmael, which we don't paskin like. Rabbi Yishmael says that the Avodah Zarah, how does it go? Rabbi Yishmael says that the Avodah Zarah of a goy is only asura once it's worshipped. The Avodah Zarah of a Jew is only asura, when it's made. So we paskin the reverse, but that was Rabbi Yishmael's opinion. There the Gemara wanted to know what was the status of the Meshamshei Avodah Zarah of... what was the case? Let me see what the case was. So according to Rabbi Yishmael, that a goy's avodah zarah that a Jew's avodah zarah is asur miyad. What is the status of the mishamshim? In other words, even though the avodah zarah is asur immediately, let's say you made an avodah zarah and you also made kelim to minister the avodah zarah, are the kelim also asur immediately or not? So the question is, do we compare the kelim to the avodah zarah, the kelim of a Jew's avodah zarah to the Jew's avodah zarah, or do we compare the mishamshim, the kelim, to the kelim of a goy's the kelim to kelim? So we don't pass like Rabbi Yishmael, so it's irrelevant. But the Ramban points out that there is a nafkamina in terms of the question of can mishamshe Yisrael avodah zarah she Yisrael be betelim. So if you believe that you compare mishamshim to mishamshim, so then the answer is there's bittul for mishamshim avodah zarah shel Yisrael. But if you compare the mishamshim, the ministering items of that avodah zarah, to the avodah zarah itself, just as the avodah zarah of a Jew has no bittul, so too the mishamshim have no bittul. Okay, so now the Gemara is going to present three different versions of the same story, meaning there are three things that essentially all lead to the very same conclusion, but each coming from a slightly different angle. So the Gemara begins with as follows. Masni la Rabbi Shimon Berei. Rabbi taught his son, Rabbi Shimon. He taught him the following Mishnah. Oved kolchavim mevat alvodas kolchavim shalo v'shel chaveira, which is our Mishnah. So Amar le Rabbi, shani salanu b'yaldu secha. Really, it's funny that he didn't say Abba, but okay. Father, Rebbe, you taught us when you were younger, Oved kochavim mevatel avodas kochavim shalo v'shel Yisrael. So you taught us that a goy can be mevatel avodah zarah even of a Jew. So he says to him, the Yisrael mika mevatla. So going back to the earlier version, the Jews of Avodah Zarah, how could that even have bittul? V'ha v'sam basaser k'siv. Now that's the pasuk we learned on the previous amud, that in the curses in Kisavo, the har grisim and har evil curses, where it says, Arur ha'ish asher yaseh fesel ma'asecha tovas Hashem ma'aseh yedeh harash v'sam basaser. Cursed is the person who makes a graven image, the abomination of God, the hands of a human craftsman, v'sam basaser, and he puts it in private. And the way the Gemara interpreted that, once a Jew worships Avodah Zarah, v'sam basaser, it requires being geniza. It has to be put away forever. It's asur b'hana, and nobody can nullify its status of Avodah Zarah. So how can you say, how could even Rebbe have taught, when he was younger, what's the havamina that a goy can be mevatel the Jews of Avodah Zarah?
How do you know that Rosho existed?
That's what I would have answered the question, but that's not how the Gemara answers the question. Mm. The Gemara is thinking, you know, asynchronically, right? If one wants to think, from a historical chronological perspective, then that was the answer I would have given. In other words, Rebbe changed his mind, right? There is a question of how to darshan even what the word v'sam basaser, how to read that pasuk. So you're right, but that's not where the Gemara goes with it here. So Amar Rab Hillel Bereid the Rabbi Valis, a name that I've never seen anywhere else. I'm not telling you it doesn't exist elsewhere in Shas. I didn't use a Bar-Ilan to search, but it's not a common name. So Rab Hillel Bereid the Rabbi Valis said Lo Nitzrucha Sheyesh Bo Shutfus. It's only Rebbe's, when he was younger, he wasn't talking about a regular avodah zarah of a Jew. He was talking about an avodah zarah that a Jew and a non-Jew owned in partnership, and they both worshipped. B'yalduso maikasavar uvizkenusa maikasavar. So, what did Rebbe? Why does that make it better? You'll see in a second. And why did he change his mind? So, b'yalduse savar Yisrael adaita the oved kochavim palach. And when he was younger, he thought that when a Jew worships the Avodah Zarah, he does it It's very strange. Al-daita davodas kochavim. Rishonim don't talk about really what this means. So I'm going to make a suggestion in a moment. But he's worshipping it with the assumption of whatever the guy thinks. And then, therefore, kevon da oved kochavim mevatel denafshe, the Yisrael nami mevatla. Since the guy can be mevatel his half, since that is subject to bittul, so to the Jews half the subject to bittul. Uvizekenuso, when he got older, savar Yisrael adaita denafshe palach. That a Jew, when he worships the Avodah Zarah, it's with his own intent, his own thoughts. Ki mevatel oved kochavim dinafshe. When the goy kimi mevatel the Avodah Zarah, it's only his share. The Yisrael lo batel. The Jews is not batel. So nobody, I didn't see any of the Rishonim explain what does this mean. In other words, what does it mean the Jew worships adaita the goy, adaita dinafshe? And really, nobody also explains why is it that a Jew's Avodah Zarah has no bittul. Why is that so? The only suggestion that I can make, and probably any suggestion that you make will sort of be able to fit into the Gemara here, is that why is it that a guy's Avodah Zarah is Betela and not and a Jew's Avodah Zarah is not? I know there's Exeris HaKasov, Isam Basasar. Okay, so fine, but that's not very... So you could just say, there's Exeris HaKasov, we have no idea why, but you still don't have to explain what is the half... If Rebbe... Sam, assuming that Rebbe always knew Vesam Basaser, which is what the Gemara is assuming here, why when Rebbe was younger did he assume that if the Goy is Adaita, the Yisrael, worships Aldas HaGoy, why all of a sudden does that make it better? And why does it all of a sudden say, so now if the Jew worships it, it's his Avodah Zarah, he worships it, now it's okay, because he did it Adaita the Goy. So I think you have to say that the Gemara is assuming that the intent... Somehow, the default assumption or the default intent of a Jew and a non-Jew are different. And again, this may reflect a monotheist's perspective, but it would seem to be, and we'll see also, I think, in the Gemara in the beginning of the next Mishnah, the notion that the guy's adherence to Avodah Zarah is a little bit tenuous. Right? He's not so serious about it. He worships it now. He gets mad at it another time. He worships it another time. Then he gets mad at it. We'll see that on the Gemara Daf Nun Gimel. So it may be that Chazal assumed that the default mindset of the guy is that he worships the Avodah Zarah, has the din of Avodah Zarah, but he's not so serious. His desire is not to invest it with eternal Kedusha. But the Jew's mindset, fundamentally starting out as a monotheist, is that something is to be invested with eternal Kedusha, eternal, in this case, eternal Tumah. And therefore, when he worships it, his goal, basically, we might call it a Hektesh La'olam versus a Hektesh L'Shah. That we have such a concept in Halacha that you can, a lot of details that have to be worked out, but you can be Makdish something permanently, which may be the default, or you can be Makdish something only for a certain amount of time. So that being that if you understand that way, so first you understand why it is that the guy's Avodah Zarah has bittul, because in a sense he worshipped him in the first place on the assumption that there might be bittul. And you understand why Shel Yisrael has no bittul, because when he worshipped it in the first place, his assumption it would be eternal. When you look at Rebbe's Havamina when he was younger, what he thought then, and then when he thought he was older, when he was younger he thought that, again, he knew that if the Jew worshipped the Avodah Zarah, that was eternally aser. But if he had a shutfus with a guy, so the Jew's thinking, listen, this is the way I think, but I know that he thinks differently, and therefore, when I'm worshipping it, I'm going along with him, and therefore it's what you might call it a hektish l'shah. That's what he thought originally. And when he got up there, he said, no. He said, that's not his mindset. His mindset is, he's doing what he's doing, but I'm doing what I'm doing. And therefore, the half of the Avodah Zarah that belongs to the Jew is, in fact, not subject to bittul. It's adaite, thank you very much, adaite denafshe. Okay. So that would, I think that you can disagree with my particular formulation, but I think that the methodologically speaking, the road that which you have to take in order to make this Gemara make sense is to distinguish between how the Yisrael worships the Avodah Zarah and how the Nachri worships the Avodah Zarah. You really have to think about that question. It may be slightly different or different than what I'm suggesting, but I don't think that one can just sort of escape by claiming it's Exeris HaKasim, because that will explain why one is Bata and why one is not, but that will not explain what Rebbe was thinking. Rebbe was thinking that there was something behind why, there's a reason behind why Shel Yisrael is Asr forever, Shel Nachri is only Asr until he's Mevatel.
The answer to me would be that the Jew not only adopted the Avodah Zarah, he rejected the monotheistic one-God view. So the rejection of that monotheistic one-God view is not revocable. That had been done, and you can't change that. So he has...
Why? That's going to... Then you're undermining what I'm suggesting, yeah. Which is okay, but...
I am undermining. Yes. I'm taking a different point of view than you.
But then you're going to have to... Right. Then you have to explain why Rebbe changed. What was... More importantly, what was Rebbe's Havamina when he was younger? See, my argument is that even though this Jew has worshipped the Avodah Zarah, you know, there's a genre of jokes, you know, about the Jew who apostatizes, you know, and he does something, and like, oh, Shabbos, and then you know, some line up about Yiddish cup or something. I don't remember what the joke is, but this idea that somehow you can take the, you know, you can take the boy out of the Jewish community, but you can't take the Jew out of the boy or something like that. So even when he worships Avodah Zarah, he still hasn't quite fully, you know, he's a farbrent, a monotheist when he's that, and now when he's over the Zarah, he's going to do that. Again, I'm not saying I'm 100% convinced that that's the only way to read it, but I think that methodologically you have to pick something that talks about the difference in mindset and assume that the Yisrael preserves his mindset even when he transfers it to Avodah Zarah.
Different times. In other words, times changed. Maybe things became more critical that Jews not be allowed to practice Avodah Zarah and return. Okay.
But again, I'm not sure that it's a true. In other words, we don't assume this is not about the Yisrael returning, right? We assume, historically speaking, that despite our shir 2 weeks ago about you know, disqualifications of Kohanim after they've worshipped the Zarah, but they're still generally accepted back, you know. Or to borrow Rashi's expression, interesting, it's not Yisrael afal pishachata Yisrael hu. So I think that it's not about the Oved Avodah Zarah, the Jew who worships the Zarah. It's about the Avodah Zarah itself.
I think it's influence.
Influence?
Yes. As a child, he's greater influence of the good. He hasn't made up his mind when I read it. And that, as an adult, he has made up his mind. It's real.
No. I'm so sorry here. This Yalduso and Zakenuso here is not of the worshiper. It's Rebbe. When Rebbe was younger, he taught the mission a certain way. Rebbe was never Chas V'Shalom Oved Avodah Zarah. So this is just the way he looked at what this Jew does when he was when Rebbe was younger. It's the same Jew, Call him, let's say he's 45. Okay, that's the same Jew. How did Rebbe look at the situation when Rebbe was younger, and how did he look at when he was older? That was, but the Jew himself is the same Jew in this situation.
What's exactly the case here? When they in the shirt, what do they have shirts in the eyes?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And now, so if the guy was revived for his part, and the Jew, you said it has not, but the idol's not there anymore because the it's sort of like it's been smashed in half by the what they guided to it.
It's
so
funny
it's not,
that
so it's not you don't have the idol there anymore. It's not a whole idol anymore. It's not a whole object anymore.
So you have given me a segue into talking about a more interesting question that the Rishonim discussed. But the reason why your suggestion I think is not correct is because it's not, you're speaking about a conceptual breaking of the idol, if you want to call it that. But that's not what it's about. In other words, the guy can mivatel his half, but as long as someone continues to worship that Avodah Zarah, it doesn't matter that the guy doesn't want to worship it anymore.
He's worshiping the whole thing, he's working it.
Well, so now you're starting to ask the question that the Rishonim have to grapple with. Let me come at the question from a different angle. What nafgamina is that the guy is mevatel his half? You wanted to say if the guy is mevatel his half, then automatically the Jew's half should become unproblematic. But the Rishonim come in from a different angle. It's a given that the Jew's half is aser. What does the guy's being mevatel his half accomplish? The Avodah Zarah is still aser. Which half is mutter? Right, the Rishonim struggle with this question. So the Ritva quotes the Ramban, who says that this applies in a case where they had actually sort of different parts of the Avodah Zarah. You know, it was like the Jew worshipped the torso, and the guy had the legs and the head, or something like that, which some other Rishonim thought was really, really bizarre. So the answer to the question probably is the following, which is that if, in fact, a guy is mevatel his half, and then the Jew comes into possession of this, but doesn't worship it, and he sells it, he's allowed to sell it and keep half the money. In other words, you don't know which half exactly is Moter Pano, but you know that there is a half there. Right? You could go down the rabbit hole here, for those of you who are familiar with the sugya of Brera. Brera of retroactive determination of something.
The Brera rabbit?
What's that?
The Brera rabbit?
I'm missing the... Yeah, someone will explain to me later what the pun was. I apologize for my ignorance. So without going into that question, let's just say if the Jew comes into possession and they sell it, half the money is mutar b'hana. Right? The Jew's half is going to, we don't know where that is, but wherever it is, it's going to become, that will remain asr. So, but I think the fact that the guy no longer wants to worship it does not, the fact is the Jew will still continue to worship this thing, and therefore at least half is asr b'hana. Okay. So now, that was the first lashon in the Gemara. The other two lashonos don't substantively change what the halacha is. Sometimes the Gemara, knows a certain discussion that relates to the Mishnah, but there's a question in what context it came up in the base Medrash. In other words, you have two halves of a Mishnah. One says this is Mutar and one says that is Asur. And then there's some comment about them, and sometimes there is a difference, but sometimes the Gemara will just say that instead of this law being taught in the context when they were studying the first half of the Mishnah, it was taught when they were studying the second half of the Mishnah. To us, it seems to be somewhat, trivial, elementary, and maybe it is, but they were very, very careful about preserving how things were transmitted, even when there's no obvious distinction. If you look how carefully the Gemara attempts to preserve the transmission of names, right? You can sometimes get in the Gemara 2, 3, occasionally 4 times, where they'll say, Ika Da'amri, some who said it was A who said the name of B, some who said it was C in the name of D, some who said it was F, E in the name of F, and so on, which has no impact, at least to our eyes, on the substance of the statement, but they were very concerned about preserving it.
Why can't it be on both parts?
What's that?
Why can't it be on both parts of the Mishnah?
Well, let's talk about this in a moment. I'm just giving just methodologically how the Gemara sometimes works. So now it says the following. Ika demasni la sefa.
Where are you?
We are 2 lines from the bottom of Nun Beis Amud Beis, near the end of the line. So the first version is that this discussion was taught in the context of Rebbe taught the beginning of the Mishnah. Rebbe Shimon, his son, said, but Abba, you once taught it differently. And they wanted to know what was he thinking when he taught it differently, and they work it out. And the bottom line, as they work it out, is there's no bittul for avodah zarah of a Jew, but when there is a partnership of a Jew and a non-Jew, the guy can be mevatel his half, but he cannot be mevatel the Jew's half. So ika demasni la asefa, they're those who taught it on the seifa of the Mishnah. Yisrael ain't a mevatel avodas kochavim shal obed kochavim. A Jew cannot be mevatel the avodah zarah of a non-Jew. So the Gemara says pshita, of course. Now, here again, nobody explains why is it pshita. In other words, if a guy is avodah zarah, is subject to bittul, so then why is it so obvious that a Jew cannot be mevatel the zara of a guy? So if you want to play formalistically, but I think it's wrong, you could say, well, if a Jew can't be mevatel his own avodah zara, how can he mevatel the zara of somebody else? Right? You could say that, but I think that there's a stronger argument to be made, which if we observed before that a non-idolatrous non-Jew cannot be mevatel the avodah zara. So why? The answer is because if you don't share the mindset of the idol worshiper, then you cannot be mevatel as avodah zarah. So if we've just established my suggestion before that the Jew's mindset in worshiping avodah zarah is fundamentally different than the non-Jews. And again, you can quibble with what my specific suggestion was, but I think that has to be the root of what the Gemara was talking about before. Once you argue that the Jew's mindset is inherently different in relation to avodah zarah, therefore he's not capable of being mevatel the avodah zarah of a guy. Of course he can't be mevatel. He doesn't think the same way as the guy about the avodah zarah. He worships in his own way, the guy worships in his own way, and the two shall never meet. So that's why the Gemara says pshita. Of course the Jew can't be mevatel the avodah zarah of a guy.
What happened to David
Amel,
this guy?
He was a guy, itay
agite.
Yeah, but he was mevatel the zarah of a guy.
Yeah, but he didn't share the mindset necessarily.
Well, so that you're raising an interesting question, which is not explicitly discussed in the Gemara. Was Itai still an idol worshiper?
But even if he was one idol worshiper, I'm assuming
we may have said that at the beginning today. There's a Gemara later that observes that someone who worships Pa'or can be Mevatel Markulus. In other words, you have to be close enough. You have to both be Odeh Avodah Zarah, right? But a guy who's not worshiping Avodah Zarah can't be Mevatel Avodah Zarah, and a Jew, even though he worships Avodah Zarah, cannot. Again, the Mishnah doesn't say which type of Yisrael, but I assume it means even a Yisrael is Oved Avodah Zarah. That'd be an interesting question, right? If you argue that the Mishnah, when it says Yisrael is not Mevatel Avodah Zarah Shel Goy, maybe that only refers to a Yisrael Kasher, but not to a Yisrael Meshumad, someone who apostatized. But I'm going to assume that, based on what we said before, it could be even to the Jew who apostatized. Amar Rav Hillel Berei, now on the top of Negim Amar Alf, the Rabbi Valis, Lo nitzricha, ela sheyesh lo shutfus. It's only relevant, the Mishnah only to tell us that a Jew cannot be involved in the Avodah Zarah of a guy in reference to the Avodah Zarah of a guy in which the Jew has shutfus. Now, that's still, what's the Chiddush? The Chiddush is not that the Jew cannot be mevatel it. The Chiddush, the novelty, is the inference that we make from it. The Kamash Malon, that Yisrael hu delo mevatel the Avodah Kilchavim, alav Avodah Kilchavim, the Nafshe mevatel. In other words, we're telling you that the Yisrael is not mevatel the Avodah Zarah of shutfus with a guy. By implication, that guy can be mevata, at least the guy's chelek. There is an oddity in this, of course, which is, if that was the whole point, why not just tell us what you were trying to tell us, as opposed to telling us the obvious thing, so that we can then make some type of a diuk, an inference, and say, ah, but this is the chiddush. And it's why not just say that Yisrael is mevata, that a guy is mevata avodah zarah, that he holds b'shut for some Yisrael. And from that we would infer that a guy can be mevata that avodah zarah, but not a Jew. Okay. Anyway.
Often linguistically, though, the Mishnah maintains the same structure that follows the beginning of the Mishnah. Right?
So okay, fair enough. Fair enough. I accept that. So in other words, to create the nice contrast, so it does that, but its real purpose was, the real Chiddush was to preserve the...
You can cite many more examples.
Right. The only downside to that, if I wanted to respond, is that if that were really the point, then the Gemara could have answered that. In other words, the Gemara could have said... I did the Tana Resha guy, Tana Sefa Yisrael, right? Just to create a nice parallel situation. But okay, fair enough. But the outcome is the same. You have an Avodah Zarah that's held b'shutfus with a guy and a Jew. The Jew cannot be mevatel anything in it, including the guy's chelek, but the guy can be mevatel the guy's chelek, his own chelek. Finally, Ika the Maslin al-Braisa, some, although who taught this not in reference to the first part of the Mishnah, not in reference to the second part of the Mishnah, but rather in reference to a Braisa. Rabbi Shimon Menasseh Omer, Avotas Kochavim She Yisrael, Ein La Betela Olamis. So my Olamis, what do you mean? Just say it has no bittel. What do you mean it has no bittel? Forever. So Omer of Hilo Braid Ravalis, Lo Nitzrucha El Shiesh Lo La'ovei kochavim b'shutfus. V'kamash malon, the Yisrael adaita d'nafshei palach. It's talking about the zara of a Jew, which a guy had shutfus in, and you might have thought that since the guy can be vatal his half, the Jew worships adaita the guy, and therefore the Jew's half would also be subject to bittul. So now the Mishnah, the Braisa is telling us that no, that only the guy's half can have bittul, but the Jew's half never has bittul because a Jew worships adaita d'nafshei. Okay. Now, the reason why we like to think that not so many Jews are worshipping Avodah Zarah, well, that might or might not be true, but I'd like to think that. However, there is one important case where Avodah Zarah Yisrael does come up, lahalacha, and we've encountered this before. We encountered this a while back, which is that if a Jew who's not worshipping Avodah Zarah acquires the Avodah Zarah of a guy, he is obligated, once he owns it, it now becomes Avodah Zarah Yisrael. And therefore, it becomes Asur Bahana Olamis. That's the assumption that we worked until now. And your question, Josh, about Itai, right? The whole point of the Gemara is that when David got it initially, well, the Gemara doesn't say at the stages. Initially, he didn't have a guy to be Mevatel. Then he had Itai to be Mevatel. But in that discussion, the Gemara also talks about the importance of the Jew not being Zoche, not acquiring ownership in the Avodah Zarah, before the guy is mevatel. Once the Jew acquires ownership, the bittul of the guy doesn't work. Now, some of you might challenge me and say, wait, but I suggested earlier that the reason why Avodah Zarah Shei Yisrael has no bittul is because the Jew has a different mindset than worshiping the Avodah Zarah. And therefore, if a Jew acquires Avodah Zarah of a guy, not with the intention of using it, he buys it. And the guy then is mevatel, why shouldn't the bittul work? Because after all, the Jew never intended to worship it. That was never his intent. Interestingly enough, the Ritva here quotes the Ramban, who says they think that the Isser of Avodah Zarah shel goy that Yisrael acquired, being Asr forever, is only Nisr d'Rabbanan. In other words, if a Jew worships Avodah Zarah, that's Asr forever. But if a Jew just acquires the Avodah Zarah of a goy, and then the goy is mevatalit, the only reason it doesn't work is because the Chachamim made Gzair against it, which would actually support my contention. In other words, it's not the fact that the Jew owns the Avodah Zarah, it's the Jew's relationship to the Avodah Zarah. So a Jew who's not an Avodah Zarah, who happens to buy an idolatrous object from a goy, and then has a goy be mevatalit, it's only midrabbanon that he's not, that the bittul doesn't work. Because it's Avodah Zarah Shei Yisrael. But it's not really Avodah Zarah Shei Yisrael. Avodah Zarah Shei Yisrael means an Avodah Zarah, which the Yisrael worshipped. In this case, it's not an Avodah Zarah, which the Yisrael Yisrael worship, and therefore min haTorah, the goy would be able to mevatel. It's only an issur derabbanan.
Yeah.
This is kind of shaking up my mind view of avodah zarah. Avodah zarah to me is nothing. It doesn't. It's not real. It's you know, a man making a clay and worshiping it. It's nothing. So this gives it so much value and importance, right? You v'sam b'seter, you cannot bittul it for life.
Right.
Are you saying that by man making a clay and investing it in something, there's something real in it that now we have to be afraid of it or ride it, put it away, hide it, we can't touch it? We should say it's nothing. It's like
so this is the b'chametz is asur b'ana.
No.
Forever.
No, but
in other words, something is invested is tainted. Right, there's an idea. Again, this is one of those concepts that as Western liberals, and I don't want to insult any conservatives in the room, but we're all Western liberals, okay? We're all enmeshed inside. We don't have a sense of this idea of purity and impurity, right? Of an object being stained, or even of a human being having attached kind of, we tend to dissociate even ourselves from our sins. And there's me, and there's the things that I do, and you know, if I do tshuva, everything. We don't have this concept, which is very much permeates the Torah, permeates many, you know, pre-modern religions, and maybe even many contemporaneous religions, of the idea that sin taints something, whether it's a person, whether it's an object. So the fact that I worship Avodah Zarah, that, in other words, it's not that the Avodah Zarah is important, it's not that it has chashivus, or it has reality in the sense that it does anything, but because I violated God's word in such a severe fashion, this object is now tainted. Right, it's, you know, the opposite of terra sancta, and the truth is, Isser of Avodah Zarah, as we pointed out, shares many parallels to the Isser of Hekdesh. One is consecrating it to God; that's a positive thing. And one is consecrating it to Avodah Zarah. Now, it happens to be we don't accept Hekdesh Avodah Zarah. Now, as if I say this watch I'm going to give to the Beis Hamikdash, it's now kadosh, it's aser bana. If I say I want to give this watch to Baal, it has no impact upon the status. I actually have to use it in the Baal worship or something like that. But nonetheless, the notion that the object is invested metaphysically with this particular taint, that I think is something that is commonly assumed.
Isn't that an idea, though, what he's saying in Shoftim, with Gidon, who destroys the Avodah Zarah of the Jew? Yeah, and that is considered nothing. In fact, they even use the very mizbeach that they use for Avodah Zarah is used for God.
Yes, but the Gemara in Temura points out that was a Horasha, by right.
But the spirit of what he's saying is there.
No, that's the whole point. You could argue what you think. First, I don't think that that's reflective generally of the biblical picture. Mm-hmm. I think it is exceptional, but as rabbinic Jews, in terms of rabbinic thought, but I think this is generally consistent with the biblical picture.
It's suddenly emerges, like springs up, that current there just erupts. In the Shoftim,
and the whole point is that if you think about, look, the prohibition of Hanah is v'lo yidbak biyadcham u'ma min acherim. Right, the Torah is very explicit that Avodah Zarah is not only usur, but everything.
That, there was always this idea.
But when Chazal described that as Harasha, and I think that's very much in concept with Pshuta Shemikra, what Gideon was doing was he was rubbing it in their faces. Right, so if the first step you do is you break it down, then you build the mizbeach, and you take the cows they have been fattening up, and you bring them, you know, as a sacrifice to God.
That everything they did was nothing, was meaningless.
Again, we agree. In other words, the Nevi'im say, you know, acharei hatevel asher lo yo'ilu velo yatzilu no mashem, right? In other words, they worship those zarah that are useless, right, that are hevel, that don't help. We're not arguing about the efficaciousness of Avodah Zarah. Mm-hmm. We're talking about what is the status of the objects that were used in violation. Right, that story of Gidon, as the Gemara in Temura points out, there were a number of things that are described as Harasha. You can, if you want to argue Pshat, it's not that the Navi came to Gidon and gave him Harasha, but what Chazal are observing is that everything in that story is totally not in consonance with all of biblical law. Right? In other words, I think the Torah's clear message in Avodah Zarah is that things become tainted, things become absolutely forbidden.
So anything that Avodah Zarah is ma'us to Hashem, it should be ma'us to us too.
Correct. And there are gradations. We're not going to get to it today, but we've explored already, when it come back to it, there's a concept of nevad. That sometimes there are things that become asur la gavoa, but not asur la hedyo. If someone worships his behema, so balei chayim do not become asurim b'hanah, which means you're still allowed to shech the behema and eat it, but you can't bring it as a carbon. Right? In other words, it's ma'os lagavoa. So there are gradations, but yes, I think that's exactly the point. Now, the first step of Avodah Zarah will be that it will become asur lagavoa. It will become, you know, repulsive to God. You can't use it in any kind of, you know, kodesh sense. And then there's a second level beyond that where it becomes totally forbidden to even for any of our mundane usage.
So how can a Jew function in the world, walking past the world, where you don't know if this ground was used for Avodah Zarah, this tree I'm sitting under.
You know. So we do a chazara here because karka olam is not nesar. In other words, Chazal thought about these questions. You have to ask the work, but karka olam never becomes asura, which is, we're going to get to this discussion, I don't know if we'll get to it today, about why we've already discussed why the asherah tree is asura, and maybe the asherah only becomes asura when it's planted that way. So the question is, what about the asherahs in Eretz Yisrael before the Jews got there? Why were they asura? All sorts of questions. But Chazal dealt with these questions. I mean, that I think the Torah already hints to. And when you talk about objects, the assumption is we follow a rov. Most things have not been worshipped. Marshall.
So the change in position between the first Jewish definition and the later one is a much broader category, right? Whether Mitzrayim can be the Bat Kol HaMitzrayim. Why does the Gemara zoom down to only Shutfus and say, this is what he must mean? They're already admitting he changed his mind fundamentally without a satisfying explanation. Why are they trying to confine the changing of his mind to a highly specific category that is without question not referenced in the Mishnah? Oh. The Mishnah is dealing with sort of av malachas. It's giving the meta categories, and they're pretending that he's two levels down in specificity.
So this is what I would respond. I've always been bothered by this question. I've always had in my mind this idea that once Avod Dezer Shei Yisrael was mutter, and then Rebbe changed his mind. So I think that there are two angles here. One is sort of a structural methodological issue, and one is, I think, specific to this issue at hand and the data that we have. The structural methodological issue is that there's a general tendency within rabbinic thought to try to minimize machlokes or minimize gaps. In this case, we might even argue minimize an error. In other words, how could Rebbe have changed his mind min ha-kotzeh el-ha-kotzeh? How could he have gone from one end so far to the other? And so that's, I think, one thing that's driving. I think that's a generic issue. I think you'll find that in general, in terms of how the Gemara tries to bridge gaps and to minimize machlokas. The Rishonim talk about, I think the Gemara may also say it, the idea, I think the Gemara says it in Shabbos, but not wanting to have one Tana says that carrying this out is mutter, right? There are things that you're not allowed to carry out wearing to the Rosh Hasharabim, things that you can wear, you know, let's say different kinds of jewelry that maybe you can wear, or other kinds of clothing. There are things that you're not allowed to wear, but it's only asim midrabanan. You know, yetzei v'im yatza potter, and there are those things that you chayv if you walk out wearing. Okay, it's considered carrying. So the Gemara has an idea that we don't really like to have a machlokes where one person says mutter and one person says chayiv. We'd rather have it either be pater, you know, pater avalasar in the middle and chayiv, or pater asar and mutter, but not to go menachatz ala katz, especially if you don't have a bridging opinion. So I think that just reflects a general way that they think. I think the second issue here, and it's highlighted in the Gemara's question, and here you have to do a little bit of forensic work, and which I haven't done. If visam basaser, the way the Gemara presents it earlier, if that is already implicit, and I don't know that it is, in the Tanaim themselves, you have to go look in the, probably in the Sifrei here, or any of the Midrash Halacha that we possess. But if that, in fact, Dosha Visam Basaser, already is being expressed by Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Ishmael, two generations ahead of Rebbe, so then it's hard to imagine how Rebbe would have thought to the contrary, Bial do so. If Visam Basaser was, as I see it right in front of my eyes, is Rabbi Yehuda, the Amora's interpretation of what's going on there, so then you could argue that that really is later. And then your argument that's supposed to what Pshat Rebbe might have held earlier might be correct. But I think that in the specific instance here, you'd really want to sort of do forensic work to figure out how early can we establish, can we definitively determine that Vesam Basasa, that was the operating assumption, that the Avodah Zarah Shei Yisrael had no bittul because Vesam Basasa. You also have the place to look is in the Tosefta and the Midrash Halacha on these psukim, and maybe even in the Yushalmi, because if the Yushalmi shares the same, and here's what's interesting. If the Yushalmi shares the similar drasha, a similar conception, then it seems to have been, in other words, in the Bavli, it looks like a little bit like an Ukimta trying to make everything fit together. But if you find it in the Yushalmi also, that would suggest to you that it's a much older tradition. And then it's not only a Bavli doing this, but it seems to have a much stronger sense of that. Okay? Fine. So now, we can move on to the Mishnah on Daf Nun Gimel Amud Aleph. Ketzad Mevatla. Now, this is not a manual for a guy. Normally, Ketzad is like, how do you do it? In this case, it doesn't mean how is the guy Mevatla. The guy wants to know. The guy has decided he wants to do tshuva. Before he does tshuva, he wants to make also a desire asarana. If he does tshuva first, remember, he's not going to be able to mevatel the desire because he's going to be a monotheistic guy, and a monotheistic guy can't be mevatel the desire even of a non-monotheistic guy, even though it happens to be the same guy. This is like the question that's asked, you know, when a person converts, And they've been keeping kosher a while. So what is the status of their pots in terms of bishalakum? Because they cooked in it today, and they were a guy. So it's bishalakum, and you know, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, at least we hold the chatchila, that the kelim asurim. Then the guy goes to the mikvah, becomes a ger, giores, okay, and the next day they want to cook in the pot. So they know that the food is kosher, right? We assume, from the perspective of nemanos, is the guy believed, even though a guy doesn't have nemanos, the person is belief in himself. That, I think, nobody's going to question. But nonetheless, they were a guy when they cooked it yesterday. So that's, you know, so our guy here, it's not Ketzem Mavatla. He wants to know how do I go about being Mavatla, my avodah zarah, sabim mutabana, but rather, the Mishnah is asking, what actions constitute bittul if they were done, and what actions don't constitute a bittul even though they were done? So the Mishnah says, Ketzem Mavatla, kota rosh ozna, rosh chotma, rosh etzba, if he cuts off a piece of a limb, pchasa, if he deforms it, he smashes it and deforms it, afa pishlo chisra, even though he didn't actually cut a piece off, bitla, rokach bifanaf, he spits in its face, hishtin bifanaf, he urinates in front of it, gerara, if he drags it on the ground, zarak basatzoi, he throws excrement in it, harezo ena betela. It's not betela. There's a, the Gemara is going to explain why, or why do we assume that, and what's being assumed here. One of the Rishonim, I think the Ritva quotes, suggests that this is only if the guy does it on occasion. If he does it regularly, then it's batel. He points to a Gemara that we learned, a Mishnah that we learned a very long time ago. I think the Mishnah is at the, my memory serves me correctly, I mean, totally forgetting it. I remember it was in the third perek. Yes, on Daf Mem Dalet Amid Beis. So Proclus ben Philosophos asked Rabban Gamliel when they were in the bathhouse in Akko, in the bathhouse of Aphrodite. He said that the Torah, he's a guy who obviously knew some Torah. He said, it says in the Torah, v'lo yibach bi'atcham u'um anachirim. You're not allowed to get hana. So how is it that you're bathing in the bathhouse of Aphrodite? So he just said to him, well, I can't answer your question in the Merachatz, okay? Because I can't talk different Torah. So he's really a guy, because you see, he asked them a shayla in the base of Merachatz. So then he came out, he said, I'm not entering Aphrodite's territory. She entered my territory. We don't say that the bathhouse was made on behalf of Aphrodite. We say Aphrodite was made to beautify the Merchatz. But then he says, Davar Acher. He said, if they give you all the money in the world, would you enter your avodah zarah naked, a Valkyrie, and urinate in front of it? Okay, and here Aphrodite is omedes al pi abiv, you know, probably like a open pipe or something like that. And everybody is urinating in front of it. So this is not Eloheim. Lo nemer Eloheim el shenoeg bo mishum Eloa aser, el sheino noeg bo mishum Eloa moter. You have to treat it as a god. So therefore, I want to say this is only if you do it, you know, on occasion. He gets mad and he does this. That doesn't constitute bittul, as the Gemara will explain. Others say no. That obviously the purpose there wasn't that the fact that one urinates in front of Aphrodite there just means that it wasn't made to be worshipped. But if you have a lazar that was made to be worshipped, it doesn't matter if the guy Baal Pa'or, they defecate to it, at least the way the Gemara presents it. So that in itself doesn't mean that it's batel. Okay. So anyway, the more interesting part, that's the latter part, the first part of the Mishnah is not so interesting. The second part really is interesting. Mechara o Mishkana, Rebbe Omer Bitel v'chachamim Omer lo Bitel. This actually matters a lot. If the guy sells it or gives it as a mashkon, and the way the Rishonim explain here, Tosos on the next Amud and other Rishonim as well, when we say to give something as a mashkon, so firstly, when you give something as a mashkon, a security, a pledge, what it means is that if you don't pay by a certain point, the lender keeps it. So, and then there's a question when it becomes the lender's, are you able, though, to redeem it later anyway? Do you have certain rights to redeem it? So that's a whole, and there's a question, in a lot of areas of halacha, when you have a mashkon, when does it actually change owners? At what stage does it change owners? It matters by chametz b'pesach, which is not common today, but once upon a time could have been much more common. The Gemara talks about it. If a Jew loaned money to a guy and the security was his chametz, and Pesach comes, what's the status of the mashkon? If the guy does or doesn't pay back the loan, from when did the chametz become the Jew's? From the time of the loan or from the time that the guy decides not to pay back the loan or the time that the loan comes due when he hasn't paid it and so on? It opens up lots of interesting areas. For our purposes, it matter. All I'm interested in right now is that the Rishonim assume here that if the guy just gave it as a mashkon, nobody would say that it's batal mishem of the zara, because the assumption might be is that I'm going to get it back. Right? He gives his nice gold, the Buddha, to this person, but he assumes I'll redeem it, you know, in a month when I get the cash and so on. The real question is what happens if the nishtakeya, if in fact the guy didn't pay it back and decided to forego it. So that's like selling it. That's what machra o mishkana means. So the chachamim say in the Mishnah, Rebbe says bitel. That constitutes a bitel. And the chachamim omrim lo bitel. So that's where we're going to have an extensive discussion in the Gemara that we will eventually get to. But starting out, the Gemara asks as follows. Kilo chisra, going back to the first part of the Mishnah. If you take the avodah zarah, you smash it in the face, let's say, or something. Well, you smash it and you crush it, but no piece is missing. You haven't cut off anything. So, but my bitla, why is it a bitl? Okay, so I bruised it on its arm. Very nice. What did you do? So the Gemara says, Amar b'zeir shepichasam b'fanah. No, you smashed its face. So even though you didn't cut off the nose or you didn't cut off the ear, you know, you're kind of, it's a deformed face now. And that's really a bizayon to the avodah zarah. That constitutes an act of bitl. Rakak b'fanah, the hishtin b'fanah, minohani mili. So how do we know? It's interesting. How do we know that that does not constitute bitl? So the Gemara quotes, Amar chiskiya. The Amar Kra, Vaya Kirav, the Hiskatzaf, the Kilavu Malkov, Lehav Ufanala Mala. It speaks about the guy, the way Gemara understands it. It speaks about the guy when he gets hungry, he gets mad, he curses his king and his god, and then he turns heavenward. Now that sounds like somebody did tshuva. But then, Uchsiv Basrei, Veil Eretz Yabit. Again. And it's total darkness. Now, this is not what the Gemara is doing. It's not pshat in the psukim at all. So I'm not even going to pretend it's pshat. But the Gemara understands as follows. First, the guy gets mad. He curses his avodah zarah. He treats it with bizayah. But then he turns around. Ve'al eretz yabit. He looks downward, meaning he degrades himself. He's now worshiping the avodah zarah again. So what you see from this is that even though the guy gets mad at his avodah zarah, and he curses out his avodah zarah, and he spits at his avodah zarah, and he turns around tomorrow and he worships his avodah zarah. You can imagine there are, unfortunately, certain human relationships that are like that. No, unfortunately, marriages that are like that, right? You know, it's a love-hate relationship. That's what the Gemara is describing here when it comes to the guy and his avodah zarah.
I mean, it matches your view of the shifa.
Correct, right? It's the same concept of the guy's relationship to avodah zarah versus the, when the Jew, I always like to say with, you know, you look at every movement, every major movement of the last, certainly liberal movement of the last 150 years, and omid berosh of them are Jews, for better or worse, whether you like it, whether it's the communists, the Jews are, and it might be anti-Semitic fodder, but they do whatever they do really well. They do it, you know, with passion and hislavus and so on. So instead of having the slavus for Torah, it manifests itself in whatever area. You know, Chazal say that there are shlosha kashim ba'olam and yisrael kashim ba'umos. There we go. But the guy, you know, his relationship is on and off with his avodah zarah. Fine. Okay, so that's how the Gemara explains the first part of the Mishnah. There's one very interesting note here. Who makes this comment? Oh no, sorry. Okay, not here. Not on this comment of Chizkiya. It's a different comment of Chizkiya. All right, so now the Gemara begins. Mechara o Mishkana, Rebbe Omer Bitel. All right, so here you got to hold on to your hats because this part is a little bit confusing. Ze'iri Amar Rabbi Yochanan, v'Rabbi Yirmiyah bar Abba Amar Rav. There were two statements of Amoraim made. One was Rav, one was Rabbi Yochanan. Ze'iri was quoting Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yirmiyah bar Abba was quoting Rav. Chad Amar and Chad Amar. There are two versions as to what the machlokus between Rebbe and the Chachamim was about. In other words, the Mishnah said, if a guy, let's just talk about the selling it. Let's to give it as a mashkon also means to sell it. But if you sell it, to whom is the guy selling it? A Jew or a non-Jew? Or to add another layer, a Jew who's a tzoreif, who's a smelter, or a non-Jew. Let's say a non-Jew might be a smelter. The Rishonim argue whether the word tzoreif here is bedafka. In other words, does this only apply? For right now, we're not going to draw any distinctions. We'll assume we have two categories, Jew and non-Jew. So one of these Amorim said, Machlokes between Rebbe and the Chachamim is when a guy sells his avodah zarah, betzoreif oved kochavim. If he sells it to a guy who's a tzoreif, avo betzoreif Yisrael, divrei hakol bitel. If he sells it to a Jew, the assumption is, of course it's bata, because he knows what the Jew's going to do with it. The Jew's going to melt it down, the Jew's going to do whatever person. It's not going to be worshipped anymore. That's not what a Jew does. The Chad Amar, Bitzorif Yisrael Machlokas. One said there's a Machlokas between Rebbe, that the Machlokas Rebbe Nechachamim applies by Eitzorif Yisrael, by selling it to a Jew. Now the Gemara immediately asks, Ibai lehu b'tzorif Yisrael machlokas abotzorif ovit kochavim divrei hakol lo bitel odilma bein bezel bein bezel machlokas. The formulation of the second opinion, the first opinion makes it explicit that everybody agrees if the guy sells it to a Jew, it's batel, and the machlokas is when he sells it to a guy. The second opinion is that the machlokas is when he sells it to a Jew. So the question is, you can now make one of two inferences. That's only if you sell it to a Jew, but if a guy sells it to a guy, it's definitely not batel. Everybody agrees, or no. They argue across the board. It doesn't matter whether you sell it to a Jew or you sell it to a non-Jew. That's the Gemara's question. Now the Gemara says, Toshma. Now there is another girsa that the Rishonim quote here, Tosus quotes, that said teku. The Gemara didn't answer the question. Now, you'll see in a moment why, when we read the Braisa, why such a girsa might make sense, or why it may not be compelling. Now, what you would expect the Gemara to do now is to answer what? Would be to try to figure out what the Chat Amar, what that second Shita said. But that's not what the Gemara does. The Gemara quotes a Braisa. Toshma. The Amar Rebbe, and this is also very confusing, Nirin Dvarai kishemachra lechavala, v'divrei chaverai shemachra leovda. My opinion would appear correct when you sell it lechavala for destruction, meaning to be melted down. And their opinion, my chaverai's opinion, is nira when he sold it leovda. Now it's a question of what that word means, but let's say leovda means to one who worships it, leoved shala. Let's read it that way. So the Gemara wants, now, first this is a general comment, which you're going to find a little confusing or a little strange. If Rebbe, forgetting about what the details are, the way I would read this statement of the Gemara is, Rebbe's pointing out that his opinion makes more sense in one context, and his Chaverim's opinion makes more sense in another context. Now, what is the implication of that statement in terms of the scope of their debate? So if Rebbe says, my opinion appears to be correct in case A, their opinion appears to be correct in case B. So I would ask you, in what cases do they argue? Larry? In other words, when Rebbe gets up and says, my opinion, we have a machlokas, whether the din is mutter or aser. My opinion makes more sense in case A, their opinion makes more sense in case B. So now I ask you, what cases do they argue in? What? No, well, that's very interesting. No, I would say they argue in A and B. Yeah. Rebbe's saying, we disagree in A and B. My opinion makes more sense in A. Their opinion makes more sense in B. The Gemara has this nasty habit, and which only appears halfway here, of taking these statements of Rebbe and saying, no, nirin dvarai lachaverai in case A, my opinion appears to be correct to my chaverim in case A, I mean, they don't argue on me in case A. V'nirim divrei chaverai, to me, in case B, because I wouldn't argue on the case B, in which case the question the Gemara always asks is, okay, then when did they argue? And they have to come up with a case C. That's not the way how I intuitively would have read it. But that reading, which the Gemara has with Rebbe specifically, Rebbe is the one who uses this expression, nirin, and so a few places in Shas, creates a lot of very interesting outcomes. But for our purposes, at the first stage in the Gemara, the assumption is here that they argue on each other both in A and B, and Rebbe's just pointing out that it's easy to understand my opinion here and their opinion there. Now, this is going to change a little bit. But first, the Gemara wants to know, so but without even asking the Gemara's question, Rebbe said, my opinion makes more sense, but mochra lechavala, if he sold it for destruction, of course it makes sense, right? In other words, if the guy sells it to a person who he knows is going to melt it down, that's bitl on the avodah zarah. And if he sells it la'ovda, or let's even to borrow a comment, the ritva, there's a grammatical ritva here about the differences la'ovda versus la'ovda for a kamatz katon. La'ovda means for worship, no mapike, versus la'ovda with a mapike. The ritva actually talks about this. But let's read it. He sold it for someone he knew who would worship it. So why would you say it's batel? Just because a guy sells his avodah zarah to another avodah zarah worshiper, so that's not bitel. But that's why Rebbe says, Nirin, my opinion, when he sold the lechavala, then when laovda. But the Gemara doesn't like that. The Gemara says, "My lechavala, my laovda. Ilema lechavala, lechavala mamish, or lechabla mamish, and laovda mamish. My time of the mandam abito, my time of the manov abito. Why would they even argue there? Yeah. It doesn't make sense that they would argue. Elalav lechavla, limisha osed lechabla, Chabah means to someone who is likely to destroy it, namely Umanu, Tzorif Yisrael. And La'ovda, what does that mean? Not explicitly for the purpose of worship, but Lami She'asid La'ovda, for the person who is likely to worship it, Umanu Tzorif Ovde Kochavim, Ushmamina, Bein Bezo Machlokas. Now, so what do you see? So we're still reading it the way Nirin, my opinion appears to be more correct in a case where you sold it to a Jew, and their opinion appears to be more correct in a case where you sold it to a guy. Now, is it absolutely compelling? No, because you could sell it to a guy and he could melt it down. And you could sell it to a Jew and he could, as the Gemara will say in its answer, I can melt it down, but I can, you know, I know there's some Ovdei Avodah Zarah who pay a high premium for, you know, a mint condition baal from 1932. So the point is that that once it's not explicit, in other words, when you sell it for the person to do X to it or Y to it, it's inconceivable they're going to argue. They're going to argue in a case of when we don't know for sure what's going to happen. So what is the guy thinking? What is he thinking when he sells it to a Stam guy? And what is he thinking when he sells it to a Stam Jew? That's what the Machlokas is about. But so that's how the Gemara explains the Machlokas, as Rebbe presents it. But that means that they argue when? Both by A and B. Both when you sell it to a guy and when you sell it to a Jew. Now, what bothers the Rishonim now, what does this clearly show? As the Gemara says, that they argue in both cases.
Right.
But here's the interesting thing. What has the Gemara proven? What did the Gemara set out to prove? Or to try to determine? What did the one Amora hold? And as one Amora said that they only argue by Tzoref Goy, but everybody agrees by Tzoref Yisrael that it's Batel. And the other Amora said that they argue by Tzoref Yisrael. And the Gemara wanted to know, what does that Amora hold by Tzoref Goy? But what has the Gemara actually proven? The Gemara has proven that the first opinion is wrong, the Amoraim. It has not only proven that Rebbe holds that it's Bein Bezo, Bein Bezo Machlokas, but because it's quoted a Braisa, it's proven that the other opinion in the Amoraim, that they only argue by Tzoref Goy, but they agree by Tzoref Yisrael that it's Batel, the Gemara should have proven it that that's wrong. But that's not what the Gemara set out to prove. The Gemara really set out to prove what did one particular Amora hold. And what it ended up doing was not only proving what he must hold, but proving the other Amora was wrong. That's why there's another Girsa that Tosas quotes, that after the Gemara asked the original question, what does that Amora hold? The Gemara just says, take it. We don't know. We have no evidence as to what he held. Now the Gemara is going on to try to see if they can prove, actually, which is the correct opinion of Amoraim. So now the Gemara quotes a Braisa that proves that they argue by both cases. Now, if the unknown Amora, the ambiguous Amora held, they argue in both cases, everything's fine for him. But if not, there's a problem both for him and for the opinion that we know what they hold. Namely, that the Machlokas is only by Tzoref Goy, but not by Tzoref Yisrael. So in other words, the Gemara, if you put the word teiku in after the first question, after the Bailahu, the Gemara doesn't answer the question of what did Rav or Rabbi Yochanan hold. We know what one holds. We don't know which one. We know one of them holds the Machlokas is limited to Goy, but everybody agrees by sells it to Yisrael, it's Batel. And the other Amora holds that they argue by Yisrael. We don't know what he holds if you sell it to a Goy, whether Rebbe would agree there that it's not Batel. Teiku, end of that discussion. Now the Gemara just quotes a Braisa that actually proves, no matter what the two Amoraim hold, that would suggest that the Machlokas Rebbe and the Chachamim applies across the board, both when you sell it to a Tzoref Yisrael and when you sell it to a Tzoref Nachri. So that's what the Gemara, that's where the Gemara leaves it right now. Okay, so actually, I'm going to stop here, even though, because the Gemara has a bit to go on, because I'm pretty sure that next time, when we start up, God willing, next week, I'm going to review. It'll be probably easier the second time and allow us to flow into the Gemara's next answer. Okay.